This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, nutritionist here in New York, MSRD-CDN. I work with Dr. Hoffman on a daily basis. I have a master's degree in nutrition and exercise. I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. I'm a certified dietitian nutritionist in the state of New York. Thank you for joining me. You can reach me by email via radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Some interesting things that I want to talk to you about today, about food allergies. And do food preparation methods affect allergies? This is a wonderful article by Dr. Gary Stadtmauer, MD, understanding how specific food allergens are modified during preparation can help patients keep allergies at bay. One of the interesting aspects of food allergy is that the allergenicity of particular foods may change with the method of food preparation. So the knowledge of how specific food allergens are modified, either being weakened or enhanced, is helpful in guiding patients. So, the processing method, the chemical structure of an allergen, and the pattern of sensitization of a particular group of atopic subjects all have a bearing on the processing effects on food allergenicity. So, let's talk about the different methods of food processing. Peeling. Probably the easiest one. Peeling, you know, common fruits with edible skins, such as peaches, have a much higher concentration of the lipid transfer protein, LTP, in the peel. Because in the peel, it's 250-fold higher than in the pulp. So peeling the skins of fruits enables most patients to tolerate the rest of it. I know people who are allergic to peach skins. When they skin the peach, they're able to eat the peach. Here's another processing method, boiling. Even after being boiled extensively, most pea, chickpea, lentil, and green bean allergens seem to remain intact. Regarding peanuts, the picture is more complex. The lower prevalence of peanut allergy in China, but not in Chinese immigrants eating a Western diet, which is interesting. So the lower prevalence of peanut allergy in China has been attributed to boiling of peanuts as opposed to other thermal methods. Studies implicate leaking of the allergen from the peanut into the boiling water as an explanation for the reduced allergenicity of boiled peanuts as well as cashews. In both fish and shellfish, which is another part of the top eight allergens, the major allergens are resistant to boiling. Let's talk about baking. Baking, which tends to reach higher temperatures than boiling, enables many egg and milk allergic patients to tolerate these foods. For example, think about an egg. Some people who have egg allergy, they can't eat an omelet or scrambled eggs, but they can eat the egg if it's part of the ingredients of a baked product, a cookie, a cake, or a bread, or something like that. And to some degree, this occurs with wheat as well. Most notably in Baker's asthma. But those who react to the aerosolized raw allergens, the breathing of the wheat flour, they could typically eat the product of their work. All right. Frying, whether it's peanuts, tree nuts, beef, fish, or even frog's legs. Most studies of frying have shown that the food allergens are preserved. So many of the protein sources, cooking doesn't reduce the allergenicity of the foods. That's what I'm noticing here, that many of the food allergens are actually preserved. And now let's go to roasting. This involves dry heating up to 200 degrees Celsius, typically done with nuts and seeds. Of note, roasting has been shown consistently to increase immunoglobulin E binding of peanut allergens. The IgE, the immunoglobulin E, is that quick reaction to peanuts, meaning you eat a peanut, you break out in hives, anaphylaxis. That's the immunoglobulin E reaction, binding of peanut allergens. So even more striking is that roasting may even increase the function of these allergens as a trypsin inhibitor, essentially preserving the integrity of itself and other allergens. Fascinating. It's almost like sealing in the allergens when you roast it. As for tree nuts, the allergens are mostly preserved, with a notable exception of birch allergy-related hazelnut allergic patients, as opposed to those sensitive to a specific hazelnut allergen. All right, moving on to pressure cooking. Conventional pressure cookers, which reach a maximum of 121 degrees Celsius and 15 PSI, do not degrade most allergens sufficiently, with the possible exception of cashew. Did you know that cashew is classified as a fruit? Maybe that explains its sweetness. Going on here to microwaving, studies show that microwaving does not reduce the allergenicity of wheat, legumes, or nuts. So, in summary, certain methods of thermal food preparation affect the allergenic properties of specific foods, especially peeling of fruits and vegetables, which are most helpful to patients who have that lipid transfer protein allergy, like I talked about earlier about in the peach skins, and baking of egg or milk, but you would want to, in a very supervised setting, only do this after a challenge in an appropriate supervised setting. So if you have an egg allergy, a milk allergy, meaning you can't drink a glass of milk or eat an omelet, don't just assume, if you're not sure, that the milk cooked in a particular product, like a pastry, or the egg being cooked in a pastry or cookie, that you will be able to tolerate it. So, and within the same patient, according to Dr. Stadtmauer, allergic reactions to the same food item may vary, in part due to methods of food preparation. For many patients, other cofactors, such as exercise, overheating, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like aspirin and ibuprofen and naproxen, alcohol ingestion, viral infections affect the degree of anaphylaxis. So this is very, very interesting. We know that many people are able to eat their allergenic foods when they've been cooked thoroughly and others not. So, but the different methods of processing, the peeling, boiling, baking, frying, roasting, pressure cooking, microwaving of those particular allergenic foods and what it does to their allergenicity is fascinating and important as we treat our patients with food allergy. I want to move on now to, this is out of Integrative Practitioner, wonderful articles here, and I just read this that I was very moved by. It's the truth about autoimmune disease. This is by Nancy Gales. Nancy Gales is G-A-H-L-E-S. The truth about autoimmune disease is that it is auto-initiated. Autoimmune disease is a disease where the immune system is attacking self, parts of your body. In Hashimoto's thyroiditis or Graves' disease, the immune system is attacking the thyroid. In rheumatoid arthritis, the immune system is attacking the joints, and so on, right? Now, Nancy Gales asserts that the truth about autoimmune disease is that it's auto-initiated. The prevailing theory of how this occurs is that the immune system mistakenly attacks parts of the body that it is designed to protect. There are several diseases that fall into the category of autoimmune, among them being multiple sclerosis, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, type 1 diabetes, and psoriasis. Autoimmune diseases described by the National Institutes of Health share common flaws in immune function and regulation, leading to inflammation that destroys tissue. So it's the dysregulation of immune function that leads it to destroy self, your body, yourself, to destroy tissue. The physical body is an exquisite repository of wisdom. It reacts to our mind, thoughts, fears, and pleasures with the orchestration of predictable responses designed to carry out our intentions and protect our lives. The body does not interpret the validity of a deconstruction. C-reactive protein, which is measurable on blood tests, is a marker of increased inflammation in the body. Several studies have linked increased C-reactive protein to a mind-body process called rumination. Rumination is the act of worrying, in plain speak. The mind process of going over and over the same thought repetitively with no solution or action to dissipate its charge produces an inflammatory response by the body. The repetitive thoughts cause a fight, flight, freeze, or faint response from the autonomic nervous system. If you aren't going to take action, the body, in its infinite wisdom, will initiate a response. Its own call to action will be inflammation. The inflammatory response can be anywhere in the body that you are susceptible to expressing it. That's often what Dr. Doris Rapp calls the target organ. We each individually have our Achilles heel, and it's not always the Achilles heel. It's different target organs. A recent study published in Arthritis and Rheumatology found trauma exposure and post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, in women was strongly associated with increased risk of developing lupus and autoimmune disease. In this study of 54,763 women investigators found a nearly threefold elevated risk of lupus among women with probable PTSD and more than twofold higher risk of lupus among women who had experienced any traumatic event compared with women not exposed to trauma. And whom among us has not been exposed to trauma? We were surprised that exposure to trauma was so strongly associated with lupus, said Dr. Andrea Roberts, the lead author of the study. Trauma was a stronger predictor of developing lupus than smoking. I am not surprised. I am joyfully validated that studies like these are finally adding to the understanding that our thoughts, thought wounds, as it were, feelings, and perceptions create diseases, and that knowing that this is true leads us to disempowering the disease process. The synchronicity of this awakening has been met with a plethora of studies on mindfulness and its efficacy for decreasing the effects of rumination. Mindfulness offers us a viable, practical, self-care tool for self-efficacy. It has been demonstrated to change the structures in the brain so to alter the epigenetics of the expression of the disease. So mindfulness is a practical, viable tool that we can use for self-efficacy and to help to dismantle that disease process. Autoimmune diseases emanating from life stresses and traumatic events, past or present, as well as the daily rumination on current events, politics, and natural disasters are manageable, can be prevented, and most certainly can be transformed from debilitating life sentences to empowering life issues. Transformation from a state of symptomatology to a state of equilibrium, wherein the body is not in a state of self-defense from perceived attack on its constitution, requires a thorough evaluation. Evaluation of the presenting symptoms is the entry point to unraveling the threads of the case. The Mayo Clinic website begins its description of lupus stating, "No two cases of lupus are exactly alike." This is music to the ears of a whole person practitioner who understands the necessity of treating the individual. The site continues to describe the variability of signs and symptoms, again, giving us pause to consider the unique susceptibilities in each person. Most people with lupus have mild disease characterized by episodes called flares, when signs and symptoms get worse for a while, then improve or even disappear for a time. Case in point, I'm thinking of somebody that I know with lupus who recently lost a family member, a close friend, and the lupus was reactivated. So, getting back to this, the beauty of this scenario lends itself to the discovery of the principles of cure according to Samuel Hahnemann, MD, author of Organon of the Medical Art, the seminal work on homeopathy. According to his principles, the unprejudiced observer, as Hahnemann names the practitioner, perceives nothing in each single case of disease other than the alterations in the condition of the body and soul, disease signs, befallments, symptoms, which are outwardly discernible through the senses. Unique to the medical art of homeopathy is Hahnemann's understanding of consideration given to alterations in the condition of body and soul. So, This is fascinating. For our purposes here, we can construe this to include the emotional trauma that a person may have suffered as a fundamental piece to the puzzle of episodic flares and the disparate areas of the person's suffering. Cases that are taken from an integrative perspective allow for blending of complementary practices such as cognitive behavioral stress reduction, positive emotion therapy, acupuncture, mindfulness meditation, and movement, among other evidence-informed practices. Taken as a whole, the truth about autoimmune disease is that it lends itself to self-care strategies. Once the person understands the totality of their condition, it becomes manageable. The label of a disease does not hold sway. One becomes able to preview the conditions that may trigger an episode, thereby preventing the flaws in immune function and regulation that lead to inflammation that destroys tissue. You know, this is more psychoneuroimmunology that we're talking about here. So the potential, indeed the possibilities and promise of interdisciplinary models have recently been acknowledged as effective and worthy of insurance reimbursement in the fields of chronic pain, with this Minnesota law leading the nation. Notable in this endeavor is the fact that chronic pain is most often an outcome of trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as a component and sequelae of autoimmune diseases. Should this legislation bear the fruit of outcomes, we will see the most significant obstacle to integrative care overcome. Dr. Nancy Gales is CEO and founder of Health and Harmony Wellness Education and Center for Integrative and Holistic Health. Fascinating stuff about how autoimmune diseases are actually auto-initiated. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.